This is Viva Con Agua.
Hello, alles für den guten Zweck. We have to come up with a new title, actually, because now we do it in English and it's not working.
Everything for a good cause, it's longer.
Yeah, but in Germany there's, of course, this word pun, alles für den guten Zweck.
Swag.
So, and it's not working. Cause is not working on a swag level.
You cannot translate this joke.
No, probably not. So that's the reason why we have to come up with a new title for the podcast. But nevertheless, I want to introduce Malte Hagemeister. He's an old friend. He's a music composer. He's an artist. He's a human soul. And he supported Vivo Con Agua from early beginning. And now we're here in LA at his backyard of his studio. So hello, Malte.
Hello.
And did I announce you in the right way?
I liked it.
Yeah, you liked
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So when you first met Vivo Con Agua, can you remember?
Not exactly, but I know that I met Benny, you know, who was one of the original founders, like very early in the beginnings of Vivo Con Agua in Hamburg. And pretty much after that, I traveled to Ethiopia with him and the whole crew. So that's how I got to know Vivo Con Agua, really, in Ethiopia. And, you know, just being a part of the inauguration of a well and seeing, like, firsthand what happens. So, I think that was a pretty good way to get to know them.
Probably the only way and one of the most beautiful ways, and one way which will never be again, because this was the first trip ever to Ethiopia.
It was like more than 10 years ago,
And it was the first well, so it was also the first inauguration of Vivo Con Agua supported well together with the Weltumwelt.
Yeah.
So it will never happen again.
Little did I know that it was part of history.
Did you assume 10 years ago that 10 years later you will have so many kids
I know, right?
And starting Vivo Con Agua in another country?
Now, I think if somebody maybe in Ethiopia would have told me that, you know, some like weird guy at the corner, in 10 years you will have 5 kids and you will have a studio in Venice Beach, I would have laughed hysterically. I wouldn't have believed him. But yeah, it all worked out.
What have you done 10 years ago? So what was your like job? What was your life going on in São Paulo?
10 years ago. I mean, I think I had my own studio in Altona. And I had a band, Urban Delights, with my buddy from England. We played a lot and toured and actually played a few gigs for Viva Con Agua as well. And
I will never forget the one gig.
Right, got on police nerves in... at the Reeperbahn, in the red light district. Something you cannot do in America, but we just kept going and going forever,
right? I think it was
right?
at the Reeperbahn Festival, and the funny thing was that the police already had all our passports from Benjamin, from Toby, and from me, and the police agreed on one last song, and you played it, I think, something like really 14, 15 minutes.
Yeah, it was a long song, but it was still the same song. Yep.
The allerletzte song. And back then when you were singing,
I was singing as well. I was playing guitar in the band. I produced other artists. I started producing for like film and commercial stuff. So, I don't know. I've always done a lot of different things. I don't really know exactly what I did 10 years ago. It keeps changing. Shifting.
What are you doing now?
Shape shifting.
You know what you're doing now exactly?
I don't know. I forgot. So I think the main thing is my band, The Great Escape. And we're just putting out a new record, and also still working a lot for TV and advertisement, and I keep saying art and prostitution. Mm-hmm. That's like a fine balance of, I have to pay some bills, and then I make some art that I care about. And I work with other artists too. Like there's so many badass artists, like singers here in LA, and that this year I'm gonna concentrate a lot more on that.
When you compare, like I know all comparisons are never working really, but when you compare America and Germany on a music level and a composing level, what would you say are the differences?
Well, I mean, you know, Germany has an amazing scene and history of music, obviously, and but I think, like, if you are like me, interested in sort of the like root music, like blues and jazz and hip hop and funk and soul, it's just here you're at the core. It's like nobody just sort of tries to sound like someone. They just sound like the real thing, and that to me is just super inspiring. Like the other day, or just like a few days ago, I had like Stanley Behrens in here. He's like a blues, like a harp player, Mundharmonika, you say, and he played like with the big, you know, he played with big blues guys. He played with War and Canned Heat and bands like that. And I don't know, to me, that's maybe the difference. There's some legends that I get to actually record music with and write songs with that, you know,
I wouldn't have dreamed about
it. I would not meet in Germany. No, and to me that's super inspiring. Yeah, and everything's like just like top level, you know, top notch. Like people I know work like for the biggest movies that are playing worldwide, and Germany is always a little more limited on the German scene. So to me, I think to me it's all about inspiration, and that's what excites me. You know, like people really think big out here and get to kind of push the limits.
Stanley recorded for a special song which is also linked to Viva Con Agua.
That's right, yeah, he played flute actually. He plays flute beautifully too. He played on a song that we recorded last year with Alison Porter and Rocky Dawuni and Octopizo from Kenya. Rocky is from Ghana, so it's a cool mashup of styles and cultures. And that's right, and I've been recording some additional instruments. So Stanley recorded some flute, and recorded some badass Hammond organ with another musician that his name is Dan Bono, and he, like, you know, he's one of those guys. He met Jimi Hendrix back in the days, and I don't know, it's like you have some of that spirit on your songs, and I love that.
And this is actually like the first ever produced song for Viva Con Agua California.
That's right. So it's going to come out in a few days, finally. I'm finishing it right now.
Just normal Viva Con Agua story that some things take 1 year, but yeah, at the end, you know, they come good up.
It's like a baby. It's like a little bit more than 9 months. You know, it's a good baby.
And it seems like you being a person for the first things to do first.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I guess
because
so.
Like
right.
The first,
oh, yeah.
Well, the first, yeah. First song, like,
right.
Also one of the persons I know, of course, a lot of Germans moved to LA, but the first one I know is you, probably.
Yeah, I mean, there's been people before, but yeah, it's
not.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, I like to jump in cold water.
Cold water. Jumping cold water is actually a good line for Viva Con Agua, because it's often really, really cold water. So maybe because I think for me it's really important to that the people in Germany and also especially in the Viva Con Agua community know about you, because you becoming a director of Viva Con Agua California.
Yeah.
So you're becoming, actually, to be honest, my boss. You tell me what to do, when to do.
Yeah, finally.
And finally.
All these years.
Why you think Viva Con Agua California can add a benefit to LA on California? And also, what can be the benefit for, like, our topic of clean water?
Well, I keep, you know, when I talk about Viva Con Agua, I keep saying it's the most badass nonprofit that I know, and the most unusual nonprofit that I know, because, you know, everybody really thinks outside the box, and it's all about collaborations of all these different genres, like music and arts and sports culture, and there's been so much fun and so much, you know, like joyful things that Viva Con Agua created in order to help and, you know, to raise money and build wells. And so I think LA, city of angels, a city full of creatives, full of amazing talent, full of sports culture, full of media and arts and street art, and, you know, it's just the potential is just huge to have a lot of fun, you know, to really bring people together in ways that hasn't been done before, and really, you know, follow that mission, like trying to create something joyful with great people, and by that way, you know, make the world a little better. So Yeah, I'm excited because I think there is a lot of potential for LA to connect in new ways through Viva Con Agua. And for Viva Con Agua, it's just, I mean, the sky's the limit, you know, because you could, you know, possibly build up something with some of the biggest artists and biggest musicians and biggest, you know, influencers in the world, and that could be huge. That's what we're going to do. Yeah,
I like the optimism of you, and I learned this saying that in Los Angeles even the millionaires are stressed out.
They are?
I don't know. I just heard this saying, and I thought it's a little bit funny because, of course, you have this big city, it's traffic all over the world, and everything is so expensive. Like, how you manage not to make any
crazy?
Not to go crazy?
I actually relearned how to breathe. I think that's the most important thing. I think years ago I realized I had like anxiety, and I was like, I can't get oxygen. And I actually noticed that I forgot how to breathe. So I don't know. I mean, on a serious note, yeah, I've been definitely like, LA kicks your butt. And having five kids kicks your butt too. So I just, you know, I don't have a choice. I just have to get better at a lot of things. And seriously, breath is like the foundation of everything. Like, it's so, you know, there's a saying, some book I just read said that, you know, through breathing you can turn, like, the difference of fear and excitement is just breath. And think about that, what that means. Like, if you're afraid, you're like, you don't breathe right. If you breathe right that moment, you can transform it into excitement. And that's awesome. That idea is awesome, right? Or the other way around as well. Yeah, you're excited about something, but then you sort of, you know, all the stress kicks in, and then it turns into anxiety. But it's like very close. It's just like you can go from one to the other. So that's what I'm trying to work on. And sometimes it works. Sometimes I'm just afraid to, just like anybody else.
I think it's funny because when you told me, I was thinking, and I never think about breathing, and I never, yeah. I would probably say I just breathe and take it for granted, like
right.
All of us take water for granted or a toilet yeah. for granted, and which is not. But for me, often when it happens that something happens which is actually bad, like we came to LA organizing the Water Week, we had two events confirmed, and I came here and both were cancelled. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but I started 5 years ago to understand the saying of grandmothers, everything happens for a reason, mm-hmm. is mostly true. And then you can transform it also with thinking. So
yeah.
Breath can be, asset substituted to via thinking, or via like mm-hmm. the way of also smiling, I think
mm-hmm.
can work. And like, I really like the idea of using breath to it, because I have to.
Well, yeah, totally right. Thinking is great, but breath is physical.
Yeah.
And we, you know, especially us Northern European dudes, right? We're so much in our heads. Like, we're so much like, we think we can change everything through thinking, and then we forget the body, and then the body freaks out and something weird happens. So that's what I actually learned. Like, it's you can use your body to help your thoughts and help to transform. It's a very Venice Beach thing that I'm talking about right now. I mean, this LA is like full of, you know, self-help and coaches and self-appointed gurus and stuff, but there is so much truth to that cliche as well, you know. There's like really great ways we can just be better at what we do, so we can get better at, you know, having relationships with ourselves and with our loved ones and with the people we work with. And so it, you know, and breath can change, you can shift all of that.
It's funny that it's funny that you said this whole story about self and Venice Beach, and I just read this thing about Buddhism, others before self. Others before self. And then I thought immediately, oh no, it's changing to selfies before others. So it's changing in a way. How do you recognize like the Venice community? How is it to live here in Venice for the people who never been to Venice Beach?
How would I describe it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a wild mix of rich and poor, of creatives and Silicon Valley nerds, and it's a of you know, yoga culture and beach bums and surfers and skaters. And so to me it's like very eclectic, it's like very colorful, it's very international, it's so to me all of that is inspiring, because you meet all kinds of different people. Like I once did a little documentary about it. It's called A Good Day in Venice. You can Google it. I interviewed like a bunch of different people, all different backgrounds, and so it always had this tradition of people from all over the world. You know, it always had, like, you know, some parts of it looked like Venice in Italy with the canals, and then you had always had the amusement parks like back in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and it always attracted like a lot of tourists and people from all over the world. And so to me, that's I keep saying, if Venice Beach wouldn't exist, I don't know if I'd be in LA. I love the rest of LA, but Venice Beach has to me some magic, you know, inspiration.
And
good
when
people.
When we go to like to the topic of water, which is of course basically the main theme of Viva Con Agua, besides toilets and sanitation, which is sometimes still a taboo topic, so we later go there. First we have to go with the superficial, not superficial, but you know what
the
I mean.
Clean.
The clean
stuff, then we get dirty.
Exactly. Let's say that. First we go clean, then we go dirty. What is the issue of water here in LA? Because it's funny, I was here now for several times, 5-6 times right. Maybe. I never experienced somebody talking about the weather. For me, in a way, it's being on the African continent, people normally don't speak about the weather. In Germany, everybody speaks about the weather.
Right.
I was here now this time, everybody was speaking about the weather because it was raining.
Yeah.
So water is a topic the moment when it starts rain, but where else you see the water topic here?
Yeah, definitely, because it usually doesn't rain a lot. It's just a few days of the year, which is kind of weird when you come from Germany and then you have like months without any rain. So usually weather just, you know, right now it's super rainy. It hasn't been like that for like decades probably. And in general, I mean, I think there's still, I think people don't really talk about water that much, but they kind of got used to what it is, you know, like everybody has their filters built in into their homes and sinks, and but the water quality is actually pretty bad. Like when you come from Germany, it's kind of weird that you shouldn't really drink out of
tap water.
You shouldn't drink the tap water, really, right? Unless it's you have like super expensive filters, and then you hear about the politics behind it, how the water get transported from up north, and how much agriculture actually uses. So there is, I think, the last years, because we ran really out of water a few years ago, brought the water topic back to the public, and suddenly now people are aware that actually, you know, there's no water where we live. Like, it's a city of millions of people, but we don't really have enough water. We get the water from way up north, and that means they don't have enough for them. And then there's the agricultural question, like how much water should they need. And then they were thinking about building this huge tunnel to transport even more water instead of saving water down here. So topics like that, I felt 10 years ago nobody talked about, now people do. So I think it's a good time to educate even more, and it's a good time for me to learn even more, because I'm still learning, right? Yeah, water is an important topic. I mean, we sort of live in the desert here, but we live the lifestyle of, you know, swimming pools and cheap water coming free out of everything.
I know that your beautiful wife is totally connected to the Standing Rock people and movement.
Yeah.
It's still, I think, 2 years ago, and it was the biggest demonstrations ever worldwide, probably, on water.
Yeah.
did it change something, or like, can you explain what your impressions on Standing Rock and the topic?
It's hard to say. I think, I mean, it's kind of dark times in America politically right now. Right? We all know that there is some really bad stuff going
We're
on.
I'm still trying to get the visa, and Malte. I shouldn't.
Yeah. Well,
just kidding.
The good thing about it, America and especially LA has gotten a lot more political. And I think when I came here 10 years ago, nobody really cared about politics because everybody thought like, oh, just, you know, people are going to work it out. Like, Obama's going to work it out. Like, you know, there's people taking care of it. Now it seems like not so much. People might really mess it all up. And I'm an optimist. I think we need all that conflict that is going on, and Standing Rock was part of that conflict that was, you know, sad in a lot of ways. But I think the country needs it to grow and to learn. And, you know, sometimes you have to be kicked in the nuts to, you know, to get a lesson that you shouldn't do something. You know, sometimes that's, you know, need to just crash. And I feel like, I hope it's not going to get worse than this, but I feel America has a lot of homework that it needs to do.
Clean up.
Clean up. And it's, you know, there's chapters, it's, you know, when it's about the Native Americans, like horrible things happen, and it's not so much in people's minds, and it's, you know, it's still sad how Native Americans and what conditions they live on reservations and everything. And then you have slavery, a big topic, and you know, you can still feel the results of that. You can still feel the racism, and I feel, you know, times like these with an idiot president that we have just suddenly show us where we are, and now we need to take action. So I see it in my surrounding. I feel like people get more active, they get more political, and maybe this, you know, me trying to build up Viva Con Agua, California now is a part of that too. Maybe I don't know, maybe I wouldn't have done that 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been that interested, but now I'm like, let's fucking do this. We have to do it, you know? Somebody, you know, I have to do something.
But so is the conclusion that actually Donald Trump is like starting Viva Con Agua, California, because he's motivating you?
Well, a friend of mine actually said, after he was elected, Trump is a savior in disguise. I'm like,
savior.
No, savior is Retter.
Yeah, this I know.
In disguise, in verkleidet, verkleideter Retter. And I was like,
because he's bringing the shit so out that the good has to come and get stronger.
Yeah, and I said, wow, you can't really put it like that. But you know, if you think about it, like as I said, like, you know, when, like personally, when do we learn the most in our lives? Like,
crisis.
Not when everything is cool.
Cancer.
Crisis, right? You get
somebody dying.
Yeah, somebody dying. You almost dying, right? Your girlfriend kicking you out.
So America is currently almost dying.
Yeah.
On a like intellectual, collective thinking, spiritual, approach.
But that's why you suddenly have, you know, amazing young kick-ass women, you know, getting elected, and you know, you have. I feel like you can feel a change, and. Yeah, I think you have to sort of look at the bigger picture, and then it doesn't look that bad, you know? Sometimes we need the crisis, and there is a crisis, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't, we always said we don't go too much into politics, because otherwise we, at the end, only fighting and talking too much about politics, but not changing. That's the reason why we, I think, activists.
Mm. Did I get too political then?
No. No, but I have to be honest, like really honest on this level, but water is a totally political issue, mm-hmm. on a worldwide level. water is linked to every genre in the world. It's music, it's art, it's politics, it's business, it's everything. But it also has the political approach.
Yeah.
And at the moment, from the beginning, we said we don't want to go too much into politics with Viva Con Agua, because otherwise then we own it between left and right.
Right.
We got problems and we won't change anything. So,
right.
Nevertheless, doing Viva Con Agua for 12 years, I got more and more political because I see so many things which are injustice, and of right. course you can't just say, oh no, we said
we can't
not
see that.
No,
yeah.
I don't see that at the moment. So still, yeah. we're trying to make people a positive feeling about and getting
right.
active and motivated. So that's the reason why I wanted to continue. And like Viva Con Agua has like different kind of approaches how you can support. Like of course you can also do the, what's Ablasshandel in English? You know this word?
No.
Like paying your sins, like the
yeah, paying off your sins.
Catholic Church invented back in the days, and it working good. So mm-hmm. you can just donate, but you can also become part. You can do concerts. You can buy our water. You can buy our toilet paper. We have these art exhibitions. We're doing a hotel project. We're not talking about it so much, but yes, nevertheless, you will hear it now. So we're starting with a hotel project in Hamburg. But what do you think will be like the thing which can work here best? Or is it the mixture of everything? Or what do you think?
I think that's the exciting thing. We don't know yet,
yeah.
you know? I mean, some things don't work. Like, you know, the amazing stuff that happened at music festivals with
Cup Collection.
The Cup Collection and getting back the deposit or donating just the deposit. That's such an amazing story. I keep telling it to everyone here and show the videos of cups flying towards the stage. But there's no such system here, so we can't do it here. So
we can invent a system.
We can invent a
change
system.
Change it.
That is right. So maybe that's going to be a big one, you know? Like, yeah, invent the deposit system for a big baseball stadium, and then, you know.
And you earn then twice. Right. First with the cup collection
yeah.
and offering it, and then
the system.
With
it. Yeah. Yay. You can't tell anybody.
No.
It's too much. So, honestly, I don't really know. That's what I love about Viva Con Agua, that it's all about thinking outside of the box, and I'm already trying to like get people engaged that are from all different fields and that are more about exactly that, whatever they do, if it's like business or sports culture or music or arts or whatever, like, but people with that mindset. So we'll see. I think bottled drinking water is a great idea for here too. Like
would
sort of a social drinking water, right?
Would you still do plastic? I mean, we're living not in the 20th century.
It's
21st century. So, to be honest, I wouldn't do it no more in LA because I see what's going on in Germany, and we have some excuses because of doing sports, doing music festivals and stuff like that. But when we started it, there was no big topic about it. And my awareness was not on that level. Of course, I could have thought a little bit more than maybe yes, but now with all the things we know now, I think we cannot do it no more.
Mm-hmm.
We can only offer a glass,
right?
Which is then, of course, not working in a lot of places. I mean,
yeah.
it's only like really probably more rich people who can afford glass bottles and think about it. But on a long-term scale, I think we don't, do so much shit and evil,
right? Yeah, it's probably, I'm not an expert on that, but but that's why we get in experts and try to figure that out, right? And, but I like the idea of rather being progressive and a little slower than going with something that we all know is the past.
How about the topic of toilets and sanitation? Do the people speak about it?
No. I think... not really. I think Americans are... In general, the culture is... even more afraid than, maybe... Northern Europe has a little bit more of a sort of black humor and stuff. I think it's more able to talk about stuff like that, I feel. No, it's not really. I don't... I mean, unless you... have to build it for your house or something, and you don't talk about it now.
So you think it could be something which could interest people here? And I mean, everybody shits. The American people shit. I mean,
I think so, right?
Basically, I think so too. I've never seen an American citizen shitting.
No.
Not yet. No. Have you seen?
No.
No?
Well, actually, my kids, yes.
Yeah.
And they're American citizens. I have seen them shit a lot.
A lot.
And they do.
Yeah.
That I can
big
tell
shit.
You guys. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, again, it's always great to find some way to talk about something in a new, unusual way. And there is many ways to do this. So maybe this topic would be, you know, be interesting to see what's the right angle to do
I
here
mean,
in the US.
On all the festivals, they have toilets. What kind of toilets they have? Well, probably the same like we use.
Same system,
Dixie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dixie toilets. Just throw it from the truck and then put it up and dirty,
right.
Full, pump it up and
yeah.
That's it.
Right.
Use a lot of water, use a lot of chemistry and stuff. So there is actually a need for eco-toilets.
Yeah. Even though we need to do some research, because there's all the transformational festivals, you know, the Burning Man's and all that.
How they do it?
They, I mean, to me it looks like what we know, but I would love to find out more about that. How, because I know they always think about the footprint and the waste topic. It's a huge topic.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
And
I mean, for the people who
festivals
don't
that,
know
yeah.
Burning Man, can you try to explain them in short, Burning Man, or... Which
yeah.
is really
yeah, it's kind of different.
Like,
it's this festival, and it's way more than a music festival. It's like I call it like an experiential festival in the desert of Nevada with 70,000-80,000 people once a year, and they build a city for 1 week, and it's they call it transformational festival for a reason, because it's all about sort of living according to new rules like radical inclusion and it's about radical expression, it's about arts, it's about connection, it's about sharing, it's about, there's no money out there, you cannot buy a beer, you can only find someone who gives you a beer, like there's no shops allowed. So that's like mind-boggling if you think about it, like
especially
1 week,
in the US.
Yeah, 1 week you go out there, and once you enter the festival, I mean, you have to pay a ticket, and it's not that, you know, not that cheap, but once you're there, it's a different system. It's a gift system. So it's not even, you're not even trading, you know. And so to me, that's like, once you're there, it just shifts your mind, because 1 week you just run around and you meet all these people who say like, hey, do you want to, like in the middle of the desert, do you want a piece of watermelon? And they just have like pieces of watermelon that they give out, or ice cream or whatever, or massages, or, you know. And so it's a festival that grew into this big, you know, cool monster, and it's so much fun, and it's it really shifts the way you think once you spend a week there. And I've been there 4 years, so I got shifted quite a lot and had a lot of fun too. And there's a great scene and a great, you know, a great group of people that try to take these ideas. They're sort of being tested playfully in the desert, try to take those ideas into the real world, off the playa, we call it the playa, the desert, and try to see how we can incorporate that in our life, in our businesses, and the way we live as families and friends, and you know. So there is a big scene of that sort of conscious culture, festival culture, or yeah. It's fascinating.
I'm really sad that I have to go to this festival to check out how they shit, to make some analysis for Gold Eimer, to see if Gold Eimer could work here in the US. The next days will be full of Viva Con Agua actions. Like what do you think? Like, this is like the pre-recording, so the Water Week hasn't happened yet. It will start tomorrow with a first concert. What do you think? Like, what are your expectations? Do you have expectations, or you just go in and see what comes out, or how you feel about it?
My hope is that we can, with this water week, we can sort of form a group of people that will continue working on this for the rest, for the next, you know, over the next year until we do the next festival. And I think the beauty of Viva Con Agua in Germany, for example, is that it's such a grassroots movement, and it grew over years into this really beautiful group of like thousands and thousands of people. And out here, we're very much at the beginning. So that's my big hope, that, you know, I'm trying to get people involved from all fields of life, like very different people, very different ages, very different, you know, backgrounds. And that I really try to push this year, you know, do more than fun events that bring us together, but create something sustainable.
Is it like, if you speak, because often people tell me that relationships work here on a different level. Is there something you could, already have a glimpse on how like different relationships here in the US or from a cultural side, or is it just humans like all over the world and they act the same, or is it like, is it easy to make American friends, to win American hearts for things like Viva Con Agua? What do you think?
Well, in general, I what I really love about, you know, especially like LA and California, is that people are very open-minded, you know, very, very open for something new. And I feel like doors open more easily over here. And if you have a good idea, if you sort of connect on some level, and but then you have to sort of you have to be there, right? You have to deliver, obviously. You have to, you know, you can't just rely on someone's first like, oh yeah, cool, let's do this, you know. But I feel there's less closed doors here, so I feel like there's a huge potential. And now I lost my thought.
No problem. You win it again, man. It's like water.
Yeah.
You can never jump in the same river.
Different ways of thinking. Yeah, coming from Germany, there's always this thing that people say, like, aren't they, you know, Americans are like superficial, or California people are kind of superficial. They all like say I love you, and they're all like smile, and they're all just, you know. And I don't really see that. Like, I feel like, you know, first of all, there's nothing deep in being grumpy, you know. Like, I feel like sometimes Germans, you know, like, I'm German and I know that culture, but it's like, come on, just, you know, be nice, you know.
And you can do it.
Yeah, it's just, there's nothing wrong with, you know, just talking about something casual or something. But as I said, I feel doors are easier to open, and every scene you will find in LA, and that I feel is so fascinating too, you know, like every little scene is pretty big out here, so there is very unique ways for each of us to connect, to find your own crew and your own scene and your own, you know, the people who are into what you love.
For me, it's really interesting that from now on, Viva Con Agua, the moment it's in LA, we are working on three continents already, mm-hmm. and connecting like also the continent of Africa with the continent of, let's say, Northern America and Europe. Is it like, what do you think can be also a benefit to the Viva Con Agua world to add like this continent of North America?
I feel a lot of the culture that we consume, like, worldwide still comes from America, you know, or is influenced heavily by American entertainment and movie culture and, you know, and music and arts. and sports as well. And those are all the areas that, you know, Viva Con Agua is strong in and is great in connecting with. So I think the potential is huge, you know. If we manage to build it up in a way that we imagine it, this could really help not only out here, but just make Viva Con Agua, the idea, known worldwide even more. It's, you know, even though there's weird things happening in America right now, it's like still a, you know, huge global player and full of, you know, I feel like full of people with great ideas.
So if we make it here, we make it everywhere, this old slogan.
Exactly. Yeah, I think so. If we can make Viva Con Agua big in America, I think great things can follow.
So thanks, Malte Hagemeister, for the podcast, but much more for hosting us with Viva Con Agua California. To all the people who are listening, without the invitations and support and connection to this guy, Viva Con Agua California would not be able. And I think our first and main job is to find good sparring partners or American sparring partners for Malte, yeah. Like Jermaine Jones, who is coming from another field, from sports field, and also has another kind of background maybe. So people like him who support Viva Con Agua to grow in LA, California, USA, and then moreover. Thanks, Malte.
Thanks, Micha.
This is Viva Con Agua.